Last week, I started a four-week series called the Self-Talk Series. And I always like doing a series of talks about how to look at things because it allows us to look at the same basic spiritual principles and see how each principle applies across all the different areas of our life. Things like kindness, or compassion, or honesty, or being centered, or seeing the unity of all life, these things apply to every single part of our experience. They apply to work, they apply to our physical health, they apply to our financial situation, and obviously to our relationships. Because what they do is they blend the physical and the spiritual. They blend the two things together, and it's all one, and they combine the power of creation that's in us with all the things that it creates in our physical world. And that is where self-talk, what we're talking about this month, comes in. Our thoughts are creative, and our words are an outer expression of our thoughts. So our words tell other people, and they reinforce in us what we believe. Now, this is important. It may not be what we really want to believe, and it may not be what we know at the spiritual level is the most intelligent thing to believe, but our words are still an indication of the belief that our directions are going. But before I get started on today's talk, which is going to be about health, I had a few people ask me some questions after last week, which is great. I love it when the talks generate questions, and I'd like to clear those up. Now, one question that someone asked, and if one person asks, I know others have the question too. One person asked, aren't my thoughts more powerful than my words? All right. That is, if I'm angry or if I'm afraid, for instance, but I keep saying, I'm fine, everything's okay, won't my thoughts still attract more things for me to be angry about or afraid of? And that's an excellent question. And the simple answer to that is yes. Thoughts are always more powerful than words. But an even deeper and more precise answer is, in the same way that my thoughts are more powerful than my words, my beliefs are more powerful than my thoughts, especially my deepest and most passionate beliefs. So my thoughts are the way that my mind deals with the beliefs, and the words are the way that my physical being expresses my thoughts. So beliefs are at the base, thoughts are about the beliefs, and our words express our thoughts. Now, the important thing that we need to remember is we may or may not know exactly what our beliefs are about anything in our life, but they still affect us. And our words allow us to explore in a more concrete way what our real deep beliefs are. You see, the language that we use, the words that we say in normal everyday conversation, the language is either consistent with our deepest thoughts and beliefs, or it is not. Either way, it tells us something. Now, if what we say is consistent with what's in our mind, that part's easy. I mean, if most of my comments about my job, for example, are negative, and I know that I have a negative attitude about my job, then I have a choice. I can either change my job or I can change my attitude. Now, if I change my job without changing my attitude, which is reflected in the words I say, then my next job is going to have the same problems that this one does. That's the way it works. But if I change my attitude first, either my present job will improve or I'll attract another job that suits me better. You get it? All right. Or look at prosperity. We're going to talk about that next week. If most of my comments about money express my fear of not having enough, and I do in fact believe that I'm not a prosperous person because I can look at my bank account, then that tells me what I need to do if I would like things to change. I'm going to have to either get more money or I'm going to have to start thinking more prosperously. Now, if I just get more money and I don't change the attitude, once again, I will either lose whatever money I do get or I won't be able to enjoy it, which is just as bad. But if I start thinking prosperously first, prosperity will then start showing up in my life in all sorts of different ways, including money. So in either case, the way that I talk about my job or the way that I talk about prosperity is going to have to change for the better, because if it doesn't, I will start to doubt my new beliefs, and I'll end up once again attracting people and experiences that are tied to my old beliefs. In fact, that is how we sabotage ourselves. We do it all the time. We get in something like this, we start reading better stuff, we change our thinking, our life improves, but we still keep talking about how bad things might get or how bad they used to be until we end up right back where we started. You see it all the time. Now, another question I was asked was this. If I am afraid or angry or confused or depressed or whatever it happens to be, and I know it, should I say it out loud? Should I talk about it? Should I talk about it with other people just to get it off my chest, or will that only make it worse? Now, that's an excellent question, too. And the answer to that is that we should certainly use our words to talk about whatever is in our mind and our heart, but we should do it, here's the key, in a healthy, intelligent, and constructive way. In other words, we should not use our words to reinforce our negative beliefs. Instead, we should talk about our beliefs in a way that sees them for what they are, which is a temporary problem that does not need to remain a permanent part of my life. That's how we need to talk about it. Which means instead of saying, my life is miserable to everybody we meet, and pretty soon there won't be anybody around who wants to hear it, all right? Or saying, I'm depressed, or whatever it happens to be, we can actually say, you know, I'm unhappy right now, but I refuse to stay that way. That's a better thing to say. Or we can say, I know that things are getting better. This too shall pass, the old statement. Now, when we do this, we are not lying to ourselves. We're simply talking about creating something good instead of talking about how bad things are or how bad they've been. All right? So those are two questions that may clear some things up. Now, today, I'm going to talk about how we talk about our body. And what I'm going to talk about today is about the things that we say about our physical appearance, about our health, and about our mortality. And I have to tell you this, when I started putting this talk together, which was yesterday morning, all right, the first thing that struck me is how funny it is that we talk about our body as if it is what we are instead of something that we have. That's the first thing that hit me. Even though we forget it all the time, one of the oldest and most consistent spiritual messages from all of the great teachers throughout history is that we are not our body. We are invisible spiritual beings having a human physical experience. That's what we are. We are the energy of life individualized. We are a spark of the divine fire. Teilhard de Chardin said that. I love the way he phrases it. But we are not this. We are not this. You know this meat suit that we are wearing? You ever hear that statement, you know? That we worry about so much is nothing more than something that our consciousness has created so that we can enjoy this physical world that we find ourselves in at this particular stage of our spiritual development. That's why it's so interesting that so many people are so obsessed with the shape of their bodies, the color of their hair, or the number of wrinkles on their face. Do you believe it? Some people actually worry about those things, you know? Not us, but, you know, some people do. We judge the way that we look, and we judge the way that other people look. We spend large amounts of time and money trying to improve the way we look. We idolize people who have perfected their physical appearance, like movie stars. And we spend an amazing amount of time and energy talking about these things. In fact, this is what most of the movie industry, the fashion industry, the cosmetics industry, and the magazine industry are actually based on. On the other hand, think what it would be like just for a moment if we all looked exactly alike, if we all had the same body shape and we wore the same clothes, all right? Now, boring? Yes, it would definitely be boring. But we'd have to find something else to obsess about. We would, because we wouldn't have the bodies to do it. We'd be in like that movie, The March of the Penguins, you know, where they all look alike. When they said in that thing that penguins were monogamous, a friend of mine said, well, that's easy, they all look alike. You know, it's easy to be monogamous when everybody looks alike, you know? Anyway, all right. Now, whenever I hear someone talking about their body, see if this is the case for you, most of the time they are pointing out something that they don't like. True? True, all right? They want to lose a few pounds. They want more hair on their head or less hair someplace else. They want more muscles. They want longer legs. They want bigger shoulders, you know. They want a smaller nose, whatever it happens to be. That's what keeps the spas and the cosmetic surgeons in business. And I want to say right up front that there's nothing wrong with wanting to look good. There's nothing wrong with working out, with dressing well, or even getting a little nip and tuck if that's what you want to do. I have no problem at all with that. The problem comes when we talk about our physical appearance in a way that reflects a poor self-image. That's where the problem comes. When we define our inner beauty by our outer beauty, or when we judge our value in the world by the value of our wardrobe, that is when we should recognize that we have stepped outside of the world of inner awareness, of spiritual awareness, and stepped into the outer world of effect. And when we live primarily in the world of effect, and this applies to every area of our life, we end up not only reacting to all of the fears and all of the limitations and all of the false beliefs of the world around us, we also end up comparing ourselves to what we see out there. That's how we end up telling ourselves and everyone we meet that we aren't handsome enough, or pretty enough, or young enough, or tall enough, or blonde enough, whatever it is, to be able to have the life that we want. I'll never get hired because I'm too old. No one will love me because I'm too skinny. You know, all those little things. That is how, when we talk like that, that is how we completely negate our own limitless creativity by talking ourselves out of it. We talk ourselves out of it. Now, we don't always criticize the way we look. At least most of us don't. The truth is, when we are all dressed up, sort of like this for me on Sunday morning, and looking as good as we think we can look, most of us usually have something nice to say about ourselves, even if it's not bad for 60, you know, whatever it happens to be. But if someone else comments positively on the way that we look, we'll often say, even before we realize what we're saying, oh, this old thing, this old suit, whatever, or I don't like the jeans make my the way these jeans make my butt look, or whatever it happens to be, you know? That's what we say, which should tell us that there are actually some unhealthy things going through our mind that we believe about our body, even when we aren't saying them out loud. That's why they pop out of our mouth so easily. Now, if you want to know what's really going through your mind about your body, think about how you feel when you stand in front of a full-length mirror, first thing in the morning, right before you step into the shower, naked as the day you were born, all right? Do you like what you see? That's the question. Some of us would probably say, well, there are a few things I like and a few things that probably need a little work. That's what most of us would probably say. And that's okay. But what are your first thoughts? Are your first thoughts about the things you don't like, or are your first thoughts about how grateful you are to even have a body? Are your first thoughts how guilty you feel about the Haagen-Dazs you ate before you went to bed, or are your first thoughts about all the wonderful things your body does for you on a regular basis, like breathing and keeping your heart beating and allowing you to experience all the beauty in the world? Here's one I'm familiar to me. Is the first thing that you say to someone when you lose the gym, I need to lose more weight, or is the first thing you say, I love the way my body feels when I exercise? What's the first thing you say? That's how we should be talking about our body all the time, with kindness and gratitude. You know, too many of us criticize our body for not looking and feeling the way that society thinks we should look and feel. The nutritionists tell us that meat and dairy products are bad for us, so we stop eating steak and ice cream, which is fine if you're not a big fan of steak and ice cream. But if you love steak and ice cream, find a way to enjoy it that allows your body to stay healthy. Either have it a little less often or in smaller portions. We are told by the exercise fanatics and the instructors that we should exercise 4 or 5 times a week to stay healthy. I always tell people who say, I hate going to the gym, then don't go to the gym. If you don't like getting on a Stairmaster and doing that kind of thing, find some other way of moving your body that you enjoy, but stop criticizing yourself for not looking like Brad or Angelina or anybody else, all right? Do what you enjoy. We need to learn how to listen to our body because our body knows what it likes. Our body knows what it should eat and what it shouldn't. It knows when it needs to sleep. It knows how much it should weigh, and it knows how much, knows exactly what its natural shape could be. That's why instead of talking about our body as we do, we need to communicate with it. We need to communicate with it. Because there is a spirit inside of us, and it's actually an individualization of the only spirit there is, that created this form around itself. We are that spirit, and our body is an extension of that spirit. So if we respect our body, and we respect that spirit of life within us, our body will respond by taking care of us. But if we don't, it won't. And we'll spend our whole life trying to be someone or something that we are not. Now, got another story, okay? For those of you here last week, this is not about a monkey, all right? If you weren't here last week, get the CD, all right? But this is a story I like, and it's a story about a man who wanted to buy a new suit, but he wanted a tailored suit, okay? But he didn't want to pay a whole bunch of money for it. Tailored suits are expensive. So he asked around, and several people told him that he should visit the shop of a tailor by the name of Jacob, because everyone said that he was the very best tailor in town and that his prices were very reasonable. So the man decided to give him a try. So one afternoon, he looks up the address, and it's in a not-so-nice area of town, but he goes, he takes the bus over to Jacob's shop, and he walks into a small, sparsely furnished room that has a rack over in the corner with about a dozen suits on it, and a dressing room in the back, and a little desk on the side, and there's an older man seated in a chair by the desk. And as he walks in, the little gentleman gets up and walks over to him, looks him up and down, and says, 41 regular. 41 regular. So he walks to the rack, he grabs a suit, he looks at it, he gives it to him, and he says, try this on. And the man, who hasn't said a word, goes back in the dressing room, and he comes out wearing the suit. The tailor looks him up and down, walks around him once, walks around him twice, and says, perfect. Absolutely perfect. Now, the customer, who had not said a word yet, was standing in front of a full-length mirror, and he said, well, wasn't the right sleeve a little bit short? And Jacob looks at the sleeve, and he says, no problem. Just pull your right shoulder up a little bit. And that'll take care of it. So, then the man said, you know, these pants are a little bit loose in the waist. And Jacob felt the waist, and he said, no problem. Stick your belly out a little bit, like that, and that'll take care of it. Finally, the man said, you know, the left pant leg isn't quite as long as the right. And Jacob took a look, and he said, well, bend your left knee a little bit and keep it bent, all right, and that'll take care of it. So, Jacob goes over. And he gets the bill, and he, you know, the guy pays for it. He takes the man's clothes from the dressing room, puts them in a bag, gives it to him, and the guy wearing the suit leaves, you know, and he goes out to the bus stop. Well, he waits for the bus, and as he gets on the bus, he walks down the aisle, and he sits next to a young man who looks at him and smiles and says, I see you just bought a suit from Jacob the tailor. And the man's eyes got wide, and he said, how did you know? And the man said, because no one but Jacob the tailor has the skill to create a suit that would perfectly fit a body as deformed as yours. Now, that is what we do. We try to make our body conform to the expectations and the priorities of the world instead of creating health from within. That's what we do. That's why we end up like this all the time. All right. Now, there are other areas of our life where we talk about our physical problems a lot, like our susceptibility to disease. We talk about that. And the things that our body won't do anymore as we get older, we talk about that stuff sometimes. Sometimes we think that our body is letting us down when we get sick or as we age. So let's talk about that for a few minutes. First of all, from a spiritual perspective, I do not believe that our body can let us down. And that's because even though our body behaves intelligently, the body itself is not intelligent. Our body is an effect, and it is created by our consciousness. And not only does our consciousness create our body, it sustains it, including all the different processes that help us to be alive. Every cell has consciousness in it, every organ, every system. Everything in our body moves and works because of the spiritual intelligence that it contains. Dead cells are replaced by new cells by the millions every hour, and those cells are created by our body's ability to turn food into physical matter, physical cells, and into energy. But consciousness is what makes it all work. How do we know this? Because when the consciousness leaves, which is what happens when we die, the body doesn't work anymore. We know that. But the body also, when the consciousness leaves, doesn't get old, doesn't get fat, and it doesn't get sick. Very, very interesting. You see, when we experience what we call illness or disease, our body is not causing us problems. It's actually doing us a favor. Because disease is not a problem or a punishment. Disease, illness, is a message. It's a message. It is our mind using our body to tell us something. Now, it may be telling us to slow down. It may be telling us that we need to get more sleep. It may be telling us to eat better. Or it may be telling us that we need to heal some major resentment we have about one of our parents or one of our exes. When we talk about the flu season or the AIDS epidemic, or the causes of cancer, all these terms we read about all the time, as purely physical threats thrown into our helpless body by forces we can't resist, and we talk about these things, we are actually setting ourselves up to be victims of disease. In fact, that's the terminology we use. I love it when Paula spoke. She went out of her way to not use the word victim. She really did, because it's not a spiritual term. It's not a helpful term. We talk about all the physical things that we can do to avoid disease, like diet and exercise and hygiene, all of which are perfectly important. But what we don't talk about nearly enough in our life is the belief that we are whole, complete, and perfect beings with the power to heal ourselves at every level, at every single level. Now, we don't talk about that, about being able to heal and being healthy and whole, because we don't want people to think we're strange. And because we're afraid that we might be wrong. Those are the two reasons we talk about it. Now, how smart is that, all right? I mean, how smart is that? I don't know about you, but I have no problem at all telling a whole room full of people, like you guys, that I do not get sick unless my thinking gets off track. I'm very clear about that. I also have no trouble telling the same group of people that I cannot heal my body until I heal my thinking first. I know that too. Now, when I have a headache, I take an aspirin. During the pollen season, I take a little Sudafed. But I don't do it because I need the medicine. I do it because I know I have the belief that those things help. And sometimes it's just faster and easier for me to pop the pill than to spend 2 hours meditating, getting my mind straight. I realize that. So it's kind of a shortcut. I understand that. I buy into that. All right? Now, that's for anybody who says, well, should I take my medicine? If you believe it works, take your medicine, all right? Finally, let's talk about aging, briefly. Aging is a natural process. We are not supposed to stay here forever, nor are we supposed to be able to function like a 16-year-old when we are 60. We are not designed that way. There are things that we need to learn in this experience at every single stage of our life, from what we call birth to what we call our physical death. But disease, pain, and suffering are not required lessons. They are not required lessons, and they are not a natural part of aging. We just think they are because that's the way most people age. You know, most people, if you listen to their conversation, they believe that aging is difficult, they think about it as a problem, and they talk about it like it's a curse. They do. It's no wonder their last few years are miserable. You know, there was a time, not that long ago, when people respected the aging process, when people honored those who were older, when they admired their wisdom, and when they tried to be like them. There really is. And there are some parts of the world where it's still that way. but not in Atlanta, Georgia, apparently, or some other places. So maybe that's something that we need to look at. There is. I mean, there's no doubt about it that youth is wonderful. Got to tell a little Kennedy story since this is sort of his anniversary. Kennedy used to say right before he retired, he said, you know, some mornings I wake up feeling like an 18-year-old, but if there isn't one around, I go back to bed. Okay, that's what... he was a character. Yes, he was. Anyway. So we can talk about the joy of being young, but we also need to talk about the beauty of aging, especially our own. In fact, there are few things in life more beautiful or more wonderful than listening to a young 90-year-old who is healthy and happy and at peace with their life and with their impending transition. It is truly a beautiful thing. That is something that we should all strive for. Because if we constantly criticize every wrinkle, every little pain, and every gray hair as a failure of our body, eventually our body is just going to give up and fall apart. Nobody likes to be criticized all the time. But if we honor every wrinkle as a reward for the life experiences that we have collected and been lucky enough to survive, because I've got friends and so do you who did not survive those things, and we tell ourselves and everyone we know how happy we are just to be here all the time, then our soul will feel that joy and our body will reflect it. Our body will reflect it. Now, next week, we're going to talk about prosperity and abundance and all the things that we say about that. And just as a reminder, your affirmation from last week in terms of work was, I love my job. Let me hear it. I love my job. Okay, for this week it is, I feel terrific. All right, I feel terrific. And next week, just to give you a little head start, your affirmation is, I can afford that. I can afford that. Okay, good. Meanwhile, all right, isn't it funny we feel uncomfortable saying those things, you know? You know, I love my job, I feel terrific, and I can afford anything. There's my affirmation, all right? Meanwhile, this week, pay attention to what you say. And just remember, if there's something you don't want in your life, stop talking about it. And if there's something you do want in your life, start talking about that. And finally, if you do have something good worth saying, say it to yourself first. This is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. All right. Thank you. All right. Okay. All right. Take a breath. Relax. Roll your head on your shoulders a little. Let's get comfortable for a moment. Take the ideas that resonated with you. I give them to you freely. Set aside the others for later. And let's just know this. I know that this incredible physical form, this amazing miracle that moves and lives and has its being in so many amazing ways, is a gift, but it is a gift I have earned. It is my birthright to be born into this physical world with this amazing tool that allows me to see the beautiful sights, to hear the beautiful sounds, to feel a lover's touch, to smell, to taste, to move, to allow myself to go anywhere I want to go in this world. This amazing body that I have is mine to use, and I appreciate it. I am so grateful for all that I am able to do with my physical form. I am so aware when I feel good that I honor my body for being in perfect flow. And when I do not feel good physically, it's not my body's fault. I recognize that physical pain, suffering, disease is a reflection of a mind that needs to remember what it is. So as I focus on my spirituality, on the God, the Spirit, the presence within me, and I'll know that that is what is creating my body will remember what it needs to know. I am able to heal. I am able to be whole. I am able to restore myself. I am able to have energy. I am able to move. I am able to experience life in all these wondrous ways. This is my gift. Now, I invite you now to take a few moments in the silence of your own heart and mind. And in this moment, see yourself standing in the center of your mind's eye, your heart's eye. See yourself there and honor your physical body, whatever it looks like, whatever age it is, whatever. Honor that body deeply and richly right now. Take these moments for yourself. With gratitude for this awareness and a clear understanding of its sacred significance in my life, I accept this truth as my own. I honor my physical form. I honor the life that I am living. I honor it all. I am deeply grateful, grateful for every moment that I am alive, and I speak well of myself always. I give thanks, and I release this knowing into consciousness, knowing that my word goes out and returns to me in the spirit in which I sent it. This is my truth. I accept it and release it, and so it is.